Hey everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Portrait Session Podcast on the Improved Photography Network. My name is Connor Hibbs, and today I'm joined by Miss Erica Kay. How are you doing today, Erica?
I'm good. How are you, Connor?
I'm doing really well. I feel like we haven't been terribly on top of this because it's been like 3 weeks since I recorded an episode.
I know. It's been so long since I've been on too. It's bad.
Yeah. Sorry about that, everybody that anticipates these coming out on a regular basis. Life is getting hectic because it's starting in on busy season, which is a good and bad problem to have.
For sure. Definitely.
Totally. Well, today we are going to talk about a handful of different things. We're going to do a little bit of a Q&A session at the end of this podcast. But first, I'm going to talk about nightmare clients with Erica and then get into another important topic that I think is might be useful for any of you portrait photographers looking for inspiration in ways that you might not normally think to look for that. So starting off, let's talk about nightmare clients. So one of the dreadful, horrible things that happens sometimes when dealing with people and doing people photography is that occasionally you will work for people that make everything in your life a nightmare and terrible, horrible times. And they can do that through many different ways. But there are some things that you as a photographer can do to prevent that. And I think part of this conversation is just to encourage you to make sure you're looking out for those troublesome signs and to have the confidence to tell those people, no, I don't want to work for you. You can find someone else. Here's the way that you can do that. So Erica, do you have any experience working with nightmare clients?
I do. Fortunately, I'm so thankful to say that I've only had a couple, in my time as a photographer. So I don't have a ton of experience, but I definitely have had a few. And I think I've had maybe four. And I would say that three out of those four, I actually didn't see any warning signs at the beginning. I thought that.
Oh, really?
I thought that they were great. I did not see anything at the beginning that seemed or that kind of, you know, made me think that it was going to be a problem in the long run. And then on the contrary, I've had a couple of clients that have given me a lot of problems at the beginning, primarily with maybe contract revision requests and just conversations that we had at the beginning. And then things kind of turned out really great and I didn't have any problems with them after that. So I saw those signs at the beginning and I really hesitated to book them. And I wasn't sure actually if I was going to book them, and I ended up doing it anyway. And everything worked out well. So it's kind of tricky to make that decision based on the few conversations that you have, you know, at the beginning of a relationship with a client, because you never know how they're going to turn out.
Yeah, totally. It can be either very apparent or one of those things where you're like, yeah, you know, maybe they're just this, that, or the other reason. The reason that I brought this up is because, okay, if I'm being honest, this client wasn't a nightmare, but they were just definitely a pain and more trouble than they were worth, because they were already trying to book me for a small session that I knew they weren't going to be buying a lot of extras and actually making this worth my while. But I recently did a session with a woman that had booked with me back in January, and it was through a referral, and I always appreciate referrals, but I also don't know what kind of clientele is being sent my way. I don't know if the other photographer has sent them my way because they're like, I just cannot handle this kind of mentality, or if it's just something where they're like, oh, you know what, I don't really specialize in this area that you're looking for, so here's Connor's number, have him do some work. So this client seemed fine, and as time progressed, we had everything set. It seemed like, all right, like whatever, it's not gonna be my favorite session ever, but it'll be a minor paycheck. And then about a week and a half out, she just started messaging me nonstop and asking different questions. She was a bit more of a heavy set girl, and she was like, hey, can you make me skinny? And I'm like, well, I tend to not like to do that in Photoshop, so I'm going to I'll pose you in ways that are flattering for your body type. And, you know, if it's really necessary, I'll do a little bit, but I don't want you to look unnaturally you. And she goes, okay, cool. Can you make me look more tan than I am? Well, not really. I mean, that's going to look weird if I do that. And she goes, okay, well, if I wear a black dress, could you make it like olive green instead?
Oh my gosh.
Technically, yes, I can, but that is far beyond the scope of work that we've discussed. So it would be an extra charge. And she's like, well, wait, so does that mean I'm not getting any edited photos? Yeah, no, you are getting edited photos, but that is far beyond the level of editing that most people would offer. So it's just a lot of these warning signs where I'm like, okay, this person is going to be a huge pain. But then I'm like, okay, well, maybe she's just being a little bit worried because she doesn't do this all that frequently. So she wants to make sure everything's perfect. It was like a birthday session, like a gift to herself. I'm like, she's just nervous.
Oh, that's
she's,
nice.
You know, like she is a bigger girl. So she just wants to feel confident. And maybe she's just like making sure that I can do that. Turns out she was just a nightmare. She was when we were in the session itself, she came to me with all of these photos that she brought as inspiration. But all of them are just these super skinny models and they're posed in ways that are not particularly flattering to regular human beings. And I would kind of point out like, all right, well, I'll take this as inspiration, but let's do that. And then she goes, no, I want to do this pose. OK, well, how about we try this instead? And every time I was trying to repose her in ways that would actually work for her, she would kind of huff and like, ugh, fine. So like the entire session itself was kind of a nightmare. And then,
oh, boy.
Literally less than 24 hours after I shot, she asks, when am I getting my photos? Well, first, and I'm like, well, I'm going to re-explain all of this stuff that I've already explained to you because it's been a month since I told you about the fact that you'll get a proofing gallery to be able to select your images. And from there, I'll edit things up. And it was just, I mean, even in the session, she's like, okay, well, you said that for the price, you're delivering 10 photos. Does that mean 10 photos from each of these sets that we're setting up?
Oh, boy.
Why would that be the case? So all of this is to say that there were signs that I should have canceled on this person. I ended up delivering everything and, well, I actually haven't heard anything from her since, which I suppose is a good bad sign.
Yeah.
In that she's at least left me alone and never said anything about, okay, thank you very much, anything like that. But at the same time, it's not one star reviews for my photography services or anything of that sort. But,
right.
I really wish that when I was seeing those warning signs that were pretty blaringly obvious that I probably shouldn't be working with this person, I wish that I had taken the moment to step back from the situation and said, you know what, maybe this person isn't for me. Because in turn, I ended up doing a lot more work than I would normally do for this money just to get her off my back and turned everything around way quicker and put a lot more stress on myself. And ultimately, I'm not necessarily happy. I have the feeling that she's not necessarily happy. And I think it's important to stress the fact that sometimes you're going to get clients coming to you that just aren't a good fit for one reason or another. Mm-hmm. It might just be them or it might be the way that you would work together. And I just want to encourage everyone to look out for those things and be really honest with yourself. And yes, getting money coming in is nice, but sometimes it's important to just say, no, I'm good. Thank you, though.
Yeah. And I think that's really important, especially because we have a lot of listeners who are kind of beginning their photography journey or at least beginning their professional journey.
Yeah.
And you just have to remember that you cannot take everybody who inquires because it's not worth it. It's not going to be worth it to work with people who make you miserable. You're going to fall out of love with photography and with your hobby or maybe your career if you're becoming a professional photographer. Yeah. And it's not worth it. It's not worth it to let somebody like that really ruin what it is that you've worked so hard to become. So if you see those warning signs at the beginning, if you see people who are hounding you over every little thing or asking you a million questions that might kind of not align with who you are or what you offer, what services you offer, you know, listen to your intuition and really think about whether or not it's going to be worth it to continue working with this person. And if not, then just fairly and nicely, as nicely as you can, just tell them that you can no longer work with them and consider even sending them some recommendations for other photographers to look into.
Yeah.
Don't necessarily throw other photographers under the bus, but it is nice if you can, if you're going to kind of break off that relationship, break up with someone, essentially, it is nice to be able to give them some options, you know, for other people to look into.
Yeah, definitely so. And honestly, in times where I have noticed these nightmare clients coming on and I have sent them away, I didn't even necessarily give them other photographers. I just say something along the lines of, I'm sorry, but I just really don't know if our personality types are going to work well. I don't know if I'm going to be able to serve you the best that I can. And service is really important to me and my business. So if you would like, I can give you a list of other photographers that I can send you to. And usually the response is just like, oh, okay, bye.
Yeah.
And,
but even
and
like,
then I don't even have to throw another photographer, sure, a yeah. terrible client. And it's always good to keep out in mind. Sometimes you have clients where it's like, it's not necessarily a nightmare client. It's just not really something that you do. I don't shoot mm-hmm. newborns hardly ever at all. I it's just not something I'm interested in. So while that's not necessarily something that's a nightmare client, if I had somebody coming to me asking for me to do that, I'm putting myself in a situation that I don't necessarily want to be in. And in that instance, it's actually great to have somebody in mind for different things that you aren't necessarily good at. So another local photographer that does a lot of newborns that you want to have a nice professional working relationship with, and send the people that way, because that's another way that you can avoid some sticky situations or unhappy clients, whether they're nightmare clients or just somebody that you're not going to be able to serve well.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So that I feel like that's about all I wanted to say about that. Realistically, I think I just wanted to rant to everybody else in podcast land about this client that I stupidly let myself get. get associated with. But it is a tale of warning that I want to let everybody else know. Keep an eye out for clients that, aren't going to work well for you. In fact, I was talking with another one of the photographers in my co-op recently, and her situation has gotten a lot worse because she had a client that she saw those signs from, and it is getting close to the point that it might be a lawsuit. So this isn't fun and games where it's like, find people that are pains. Man, it's a pain. Like sometimes it can really be serious if you allow yourself to work with somebody who is showing you red flags that you should not be working with them. So seriously, keep in mind when you see those kinds of red flags.
Wow. That sounds really scary.
Yeah. And there's a part of it where I feel like she could kind of alleviate the problem. Like the person is being entirely unreasonable, but it sounds like she would just go away if the lady refunded her money. And it wasn't even that big of a shoot, but she's just on principle saying no. And that's another little point here is if you have a client that's really going to make that much of a stink about it, just ask for whatever deliverables you gave them back. I know that's kind of hard when it's digital files because they can just copy them, but expect that they're doing it in good faith. And sometimes it's just worth to give the money back if they're going to be going to the point of talking to a lawyer over something. That's not something you want to be dealing with if you can avoid it at all costs.
Right. And kind of related to this, this is something that we've talked about before, but this is a really good example of when having your business registered as an LLC is really important. If somebody
absolutely
takes you to court and sues you as an LLC, the amount of compensation is only, and forgive me if I'm using the wrong terms because I'm not a lawyer, but the amount of compensation is equivalent to what your business is worth, and they can't sue you as an individual because you're registered as an LLC. If you're not registered as an LLC and the business is just registered like as you, as a person, then they can sue you for everything that you have, your house and your car and all the things that aren't really a part of your business they have access to in that lawsuit. So protect yourself and register as an LLC so that all of your personal assets, your house, your car, your personal finances are all safe in case somebody does try to take you to court and sue you.
Yeah. And something I will add on to that I know I add on anytime this is brought up, but make sure that when you have an LLC that you keep your personal finances and your business's finances completely separate. Only make business purchases that are actually business purchases with your business card, and make sure that you are on a payroll of your business. So you're not just saying, I did a lot of work, so I deserve $400 from that long day of work. Make sure that you have an actual set wage for yourself. And if you don't have the income in your business to actually pay yourself that, you're allowed to forego that money as a partner of the LLC. You can say, I'm revoking my paycheck right now. So it's not like if you say, I want to pay myself 50 grand a year, and then your business is realistically only making 30, you don't have to put your business in debt to pay yourself. You're allowed to say, no, I'm foregoing that. But make sure that you keep your finances separate between the two of them, and that any income you use for personal money or personal use that comes from that is from your actual paycheck that you can track through your business. Otherwise, you can have an LLC that looks nice and pleasant up front, but then they look at your books and say, okay, well, realistically, you're not using this as an LLC. You're using this as a sole proprietor business where you are just using the money willy-nilly. And then even if you're registered as an LLC, you could still be sued for everything that is your personal assets as well. So make sure that you keep those two things separate.
Great point.
Awesome. Well, now I want to get on to another subject that has been kind of stewing around in my brain, and that is finding inspiration for photography and portraiture by studying great painters. This is something that I've been doing recently, more so because I've been trying to achieve a modern classic look in a lot of my individual studio portraits that I've been shooting recently. And I wanted to take inspiration for posing and look at different kinds of lighting, different composition in ways that I don't necessarily see them all the time. So something that I've noticed in the past is if I'm on Pinterest looking at portraits that are taken by other photographers, I end up trending towards the same stuff that everybody else is doing. And sure, that's great and fine. And if that's something that you want to do because you're not necessarily concerned about the artistic side of what you're doing and want this to be more just for a business, you want something that's going to appeal to the masses, more power to you. I think that's just fine. But in my instance, I want to make sure that my work is standing out a little bit differently. And one way that I have started going about doing that is instead of looking at portraits of modern photographers that are taking portraits the same time that I am, and inevitably replicating work that's similar to theirs, I've been going back and just looking and studying paintings. So there are a number of fantastic portrait artists throughout the ages. Obviously, we use Rembrandt lighting because of the painter Rembrandt, who had use of this kind of dramatic dark triangle. Well, he used the Rembrandt triangle. The thing that we all know of as Rembrandt lighting comes from a way that he tended to paint his subjects. But I think that there are a number of other really great painters. The three that I've been studying recently have been Rembrandt, Johannes Vermeer, and John Singer Sargent. So Vermeer and Rembrandt are both painters from the 1600s, and the clothing and fashion and everything aesthetically was pretty different. So I don't necessarily look at them for like, oh, I want to replicate a composition that's similar to this, because they're oftentimes really busy. And in my opinion, it's not necessarily something that I would want to create. But it's great for looking at the way that they use light. Both of them are really notorious for using light in interesting ways. In fact, Vermeer was kind of known for painting with light, quote unquote, in that he paints in a way that is almost photorealistic. And there's been lots of discussions about whether or not he actually used a camera obscura to be able to create his portraits. But, well, for anybody looking for an interesting artistic movie to watch, the movie Tim's Vermeer is pretty interesting. It follows this guy, Tim Jennison, who's some multi-millionaire, if not billionaire, that decides he wants to recreate Vermeer and comes up with and realizes that a camera obscura doesn't quite work. It's really interesting. It's hard to explain, and it's a documentary, but watch it. I promise anybody that watches the movie Tim's Vermeer will not be disappointed. I've been looking at the painter John Singer Sargent as far as a slightly more modern painter that has a lot in his compositions that I think are interesting. The way that he places his subjects, the way the size of canvases, the aspect ratios that he uses, it's just beautiful. And all of this is not really a super cohesive point, I suppose. It's just a, hey guys, here's a way to find some inspiration that I think is really useful, because you allow yourself to draw on historical standards for the way that art has been created, and looking at not just, it's like going to Ansel Adams as the only representation of a great photographer that so many people know. He's great, absolutely, but he didn't do portraits. So where can you go for someone who is a master of portrait work and posing you go to painters because that's the only people who have really, well, there have been plenty of photographers that are very well known for portraits, but you don't want to necessarily create another photographer's form of portraits. One other point that I want to make about this is that when you look at the poses that are used in paintings, they're oftentimes much more natural and organic. And the reason for that is because, unlike a photograph where you need somebody to hold a pose for a couple seconds while you get your shot, these people had to sit for hours and hours and hours on end. And so it's a very interesting place to look for posing and different unique ways that, honestly, a lot of, especially in John Singer Sargent's work, I haven't seen poses like this done in photography, at least not modern photography, all that often. And it can be, it's cool, guys. Running out of brain steam here.
Well, I think it's a really interesting way to look at art, and it's a really interesting way to find inspiration as a photographer, because like you said, looking at Pinterest, looking at Instagram, you are seeing a lot of the same things over and over and over again. You're seeing a lot of similar processing styles, a lot of similar light usage, posing, all that kind of stuff. So looking outside of the photography world for your inspiration is going to kind of help you really break outside of that box of repetitiveness and what everybody else is doing. I don't do the painter thing that Connor's talked about, but what I love doing is using movies or TV shows for my inspiration for light and composition, especially. And one that I'm absolutely loving right now is The Handmaid's Tale, which is a new show by Hulu. And,
yeah.
It's a book. If you like to read the book. It's like, it is such a crazy story, and it's so weird how similar it is to our current political climate and our current situation. It's just really creepy. And it's old book, so it's weird how similar it is right now. But the show that Hulu has created is beautifully done. The way they use the light and the composition and the framing and everything is just really, really gorgeous. So watching that for me has been a really big source of inspiration for light, especially over the past month or so, because it's a new show. So I've been drawing a lot of inspiration from that and really enjoying that.
I think that that's actually a great point. I'm glad that you brought that up, because that's something that I definitely do as well. And there, sometimes it really frustrates me, because I'll see a scene that I think is just absolutely gorgeous, and then the scene will stick out in my head for like weeks and months later, where I'm like, something about the color toning or the composition or the lighting just really got to me. And then I end up having to go back through a television show where it's like, okay, how many episodes in a season? It was probably in the season. Where was this one scene where this lighting was just what I want to recreate?
Yeah. And
I'll end up kicking myself because I can never quite find the thing that I'm thinking of. That's something. Is composition's kind of hard with that, because in film, you're stuck with the horizontal with letter boxes. So, sure. Or whatever that's called. Mm-hmm. So the composition, it's more like placement of where
objects.
Your subject is in the scene. And that's really interesting to look at. But especially for lighting and color toning is something that realistically, I think film does a really great job of that I don't often see in photography, at least not popular photography or the photography for the masses. It's oftentimes just
the
warm
fine art
tones.
Photography that you
and
see much of.
Totally. And it's something that's great to draw inspiration from. I mean, I think that the reason that I started using gels was because of the show Daredevil. And I was just like, ooh, they have lots of different like warm and cool color tones, and the way that those complement each other and contrast each other is really interesting. So I guess this whole conversation can kind of spread into not just studying painters, but study work that's not just photography. Mm-hmm. Anything else where you have people in light as an art form. It's so film. I mean, even I'm sure if you were to go and watch dance or any kind of theater, the way that they light there is going to be very specific and used for different effects. Like, there are people that specialize in film and in theater in lighting, and that's the only thing that they do. So really not just paying attention to the storyline that's being taught, but or that's being performed, but looking into the more subtle details and all the work that's gone into that can really be a great source of inspiration in your work.
Absolutely.
So one reference that I just want to tell everybody about that I've found great in my studying of painters is there is a series of books. It's called Delphi, so D-E-L-P-H-I, Complete Works of and then whatever the artist's name of. All of them are pretty extensive. I don't know if they're all actually the complete works of these individual artists, but it has long descriptions of like what they were going through at the time, what they were commissioned for, who they were commissioned by, who this portrait is of. And they're really inexpensive. So it's all just like a Kindle book version of things. So you would have to have a smartphone or a computer or somewhere else to read them. But if you search for Delphi complete works of Vermeer or Rembrandt or John Singer Sargent on Amazon, I think they cost $2.50, somewhere around there. And it's so a great. Cheap. Yeah, it's really. I mean, when I was specifically looking for John Singer Sargent books, that's how I found this whole series. And seriously, all the other books were like $50 and $60 because they're hardcover books that are,
yeah,
you know, giant replications.
Yeah, so, books of art are really expensive.
Yeah, and you know, it's one of those things that, sure, having a physical, tangible print to look at would be great. I would prefer that even. But just to be able to study and get some reference points, having a digital copy for $2.50 is, like, ridiculous. And I would encourage anybody else interested in following through with this to go look up that series of books.
Awesome. I might actually go look it up now. Connor, you've inspired me.
Please do. All right. So moving on from here, I think we're going to get into some Q&As.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. We're already running on around the time that our show runs, but in general,
a couple of them. Up.
Yeah, like we might as well hit a couple.
Yeah.
Erica, do you see anything in here that you would particularly like to touch on?
Well, I think Annalisa's question was kind of important. I think it's something that I've heard a lot of people ask about in the past. So Annalise asks, I have a few solo weddings coming up and I feel slightly lost without Papa Bear in the lead. How do you manage when you're shooting a wedding all by yourself? Any tips for anxious photographers? And I think this is a really important question, not just for people who are shooting weddings by themselves, but also for new photographers who might just be starting out with portraits and, you know, have shoots on the horizon that they're anxious about. So
absolutely,
you know, this doesn't have to be really a wedding centric conversation that we have. It can be good for everybody. I mean, I think the most important thing that you can do to help with anxiety for a wedding or any type of shoot is just making sure that you're fully prepared and ready to go. So for weddings in particular, that means making sure that you have your timeline nailed down with a little bit of wiggle room in case you need to slow down at some point. Making sure that you have all of the shot list and the family photo list and everything laid out, ready to go and super organized and in a way that it's going to flow well so that when you're there kind of trying to run things by yourself, things will flow in a nice, orderly manner and you don't have to worry about jumping around all over the place. Another thing that could be really helpful is to either bring an assistant with you or appoint an assistant the day of. It can be maybe a maid of honor or a bridesmaid or an aunt or somebody who seems to kind of know everybody and have everything together to help you keep things organized and to help you, especially during the family photo session, to help you, you know, pull people out of the crowd and get people lined up and ready to go to help make that much more smooth and run much more quickly. So by really kind of focusing on all the different things that you can do to keep things organized beforehand, it's going to help you feel more organized and hopefully less stressed on the wedding day.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really liked the point that you had about making sure that if you don't have a second shooter, having someone for an assistant there. And while it can be really useful when doing formal shots, I always assign, I have the bride tell me the person that is going to know all of the different family members or at least have enough of a take charge attitude to go mm-hmm. find those people for formals.
Yeah, for sure.
And having somebody that's in the wedding party to do that is fantastic. For a lot of other things, I don't necessarily want to be pulling somebody out because I've out from their party and their enjoyment to hold a light stand or something if I have this particular shot I want to take. And in that instance, I would say, even if you don't have a photographer for a second shooter, having somebody that you can pay a little bit of money to just come and give you assistance when you need it is really great. I've shot weddings completely on my own before, and I'm always hustling one way or the other, but it's a lot more hustle to not get a bunch of shots, but just a one shot when it's me by myself versus if I have somebody else where I can say, hey, can you run back to my car and grab this for me? Like, you don't need to run, but I just need it. I'm going to need it in about 5 minutes. Having somebody that can do that for you instead of being like, oh man, in 5 minutes, I need this thing and it's in my car. I got to go run and grab that. Having somebody else there is really helpful and nice. My other piece of advice would be just trust that you know what you're doing. The first wedding that I ever shot solo, I was so panicked about the fact that what if I miss this, that, or the other, that I think I shot like 5,000 photos of this little 2.5 hour wedding because I was just nonstop spray and pray. I'm just going to capture everything and figure out what's good later. And had I trusted myself, because I knew what I was doing well enough that if I had slowed down and just gotten the shots that I needed, there are like 3 moments throughout the day where it's like, if you miss that moment, that's huge. That's really important. Right. Everything else, it's like, just slow down and pay attention to what's going on. And I mean, keep shooting, keep hustling, keep working, but don't feel like you need to spray and pray every moment of the day. And that's something that you're going to be tempted to do when your anxiety takes over, when you're like, am I going to miss something? I need to shoot everything. And just trust that if you slow down, you're going to see those moments when they happen. Anything that you're around, if there's something interesting, you're going to get it. And just trust that as a photographer, you know what you're doing. And Annalise, you know what you're doing. Just trust yourself.
Right. And one final thing to kind of address specifically the anxious part of her question. Yeah. Make sure that you give yourself time before the wedding to relax and do something that is really going to help you relax. So whether that is going to yoga or going to your favorite coffee shop or taking a walk or sleeping in, whatever it is that makes you feel relaxed, give yourself time that morning to do that so that you can go into the wedding without those anxious feelings, feeling relaxed and confident in yourself, and just, you know, be able to enjoy your day a little bit before you have to start working. So make sure that you give yourself that time and don't stress yourself out with trying to frantically get ready at the last minute or charge your batteries at the last minute or clean your house at the last minute, whatever. Don't do any of that stuff. Make sure you're prepared the day before and then give yourself time that morning to just enjoy life and relax a little bit before you have to go into work.
Absolutely. And this is something that I will say is a pretty minor difference, but as far as being ready the night before, I say pack up your car the night before. Go through your checklist, make sure you have everything, get everything in your car. So I've done that versus just putting everything right by the door. And inevitably when I put everything right by the door, I feel like I don't have enough time and then I'm rushing stuff back and forth. And then I'm worried because I'm like, oh, I didn't have time to make sure everything was there. And I'm like, did I leave something in my house? That would be terrible. Where if it's done the night before, I have my time to kind of take my time and go through and, all right, everything I need is here. It's in the car. It's ready to go. And then I can wake up in the morning and not feel stressed about, did I grab everything? Mm-hmm. So that's just a little add on to the make sure that you have some you time in the morning. And part of that is making sure that 100% you are ready to go. All you need to do is put on your clothes and get out the door to actually go on your shoot.
Nice.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that was a really important one to touch on, not just from a wedding perspective, but just photo sessions in general. If Absolutely. You're anxious, make sure that you're taking the time for yourself and doing little things to help maintain your sanity. All right. Here's another one that I think is really interesting, and it's a name that I'm going to butcher. I'm sorry. So Wojciech, I don't know how to pronounce this. Wojciech, how much of a successful portrait photographer comes from their skill and how much from their personality/ability to connect with people they shoot? Mm. Erica, what's your stance on this?
That is such a good question, first of all. And I would have to say both of those things are super important. I have seen so many photographers who are really good photographers. They have great skills, but maybe they're socially uncomfortable or they're mm-hmm. extremely introverted or something, and they cannot make their business last because they don't have the type of personality to be able to really communicate with people, to market themselves, put themselves out into the world. And then when they are working with a client, they don't have the communication skills to really be able to direct the client how they need to. So inevitably their business doesn't succeed. I've also seen people who have really awesome personalities who maybe aren't the best photographers, but their business is successful because they are able to communicate and to market themselves and talk about themselves and brag on themselves. and that has really been really successful for their business. Their skills, again, maybe aren't the best, but yeah. they make up with it. They make up for it with their personality. So, you know, part of me does want to say that a lot of being a successful portrait photographer is your personality. Oh, puppy. And the ability to be able to shoot or to connect when people are, when you're shooting someone. So yeah, I think it's really important to be able to have both of those skills to maintain a good, solid portrait photography business.
Yeah, absolutely. When I was reading this question, I kind of was torn between two different ways to answer this, because part of it seems like they're asking about being successful in the sense that you are getting great photographs. And then other parts are successful as in business and being able to sustain yourself as a business person. And I totally agree with everything that you said from the business side of things. That having personality is definitely really important. But at the same time, from the business side, if you have a great skill in running your business and managing your marketing and everything like that, you don't necessarily have to put yourself out there so much. So I would say for introverted people, if you really focus on the business side of things, connections with people are crucial. It's really important that you learn how to do that. But being able to run your business like a finely oiled machine is going to make a huge difference in success from that standpoint. As far as being successful in getting great photographs, I think that just even defining skill is really hard to say, because somebody could be really skilled at shooting in manual mode, but have never taken the time to train their eye for composition or never taken the time to learn lighting. So it's like skill is so important, but it's skill in so many different areas. And I think one of those areas is learning to connect with your client. I think that that's just as important as learning how to light someone. If you don't know how to connect with a person, they're going to look stiff and awkward in every photo you take.
Absolutely.
So I think that whether you're an introvert or extrovert, this is something that you don't necessarily have to always be authentically connecting with every person. You just need to learn some sort of shtick that can allow you to pull out them as a person as you capture them. And as somebody who's kind of an extroverted introvert, I'm very excited about things that I'm interested in. And then it's very hard for me to pull myself out of my shell and like engage with another person as somebody else.
Yeah. And I'm the same way. I'm an introvert. So
yeah,
I don't want any introverts to listen to this and think, oh my gosh, I'm not going to be successful because I'm an introvert. That's not the case at all. I'm an introvert. I sometimes have a really hard time talking to people about, you know, making small talk with people like Connor. Yeah. If there's something that I'm really interested in, I can talk about it all day, but it's hard for me to make small talk. It's hard for me to like really put myself out there in the world, and I still have a very successful business. So it's not impossible to make that work. It's just a little more difficult, and you have to kind of overcome that uncomfortableness. I don't even know if that's a word, whatever.
I don't know.
And really push yourself to be more open and to engage in those conversations, even when you feel a little awkward, because that's really what's going to help you become a better business person. But also, like Connor said, a better photographer as well, because you have to be able to connect with the person that you're photographing in order for them to be comfortable while you're photographing them.
Yeah, definitely. So I, as uncomfortable as it can make me from time to time to just try and engage an individual, I've trained myself to, it's not necessarily being high energy Connor, but more just asking questions, even if I don't care and I don't need an answer, and taking a minute to stop shooting, to let them answer and talk with them and help build a rapport with a person. My answer to this part of it would be just ask a lot of questions and then follow up to those questions, like listen to little bits and follow up, because people, in the same way that I can talk about the things I'm interested in all day, other people will always want to talk about the things that they're interested in. So if you can ask questions until you see a little spark of somebody being really interested in something, and then just keep asking them about that in different aspects. Well, how long have you done that? And oh, like, what is it in particular that you like about it? Sometimes it feels very forced and fake from my side, but it doesn't read as that from their side, because right. I'm just asking more about the thing that they're interested in. Right. And for that reason, I've learned to, well, I could probably get a great portrait in a minute and a half or 2 minutes, or, you know, have a decent session in 30 minutes if I were to just sit the person down and shoot nonstop. I push my sessions pretty long. I'm 2 hours to sometimes 3 hours now, just depending on the type of session that I'm doing. And the majority of that time is not me shooting. It's me just interacting with a person. And then they'll be a lot more patient with you as you kind of tweak things and perfect and be nerdy about the thing that you do, because you've taken such an interest in what they do that they'll find it kind of interesting when you're expressing your skills and your passion about something by taking your time to really refine things. I feel like I ran out of steam there, but
it sounded good.
Okay, good. Do that, guys. All right. Well, I feel like that's enough for today. How do you feel, Erica?
I feel the same way, Connor.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys very much for listening. And thank you, Erica, for coming and joining me.
Connor.
Well, we will talk to you guys, hopefully, in another 7 days. Bye-bye, guys.
The views expressed on this program by independent hosts, guests, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views of Improved Photography LLC or its advertisers. Some links mentioned on this program are affiliate links where a commission is earned.